That's all it would take. He'd said that things started to go south pretty quickly after only a few days. That's me, going south. I closed my eyes and tried to breathe through my mouth, but that only caused my lower lip to crack in a disgusting fissure that made me look like I had some sort of hideous deformity. I would have cried, but my eyes could barely maintain enough moisture to allow me to see. At 6:45, I uncurled and started the car, nursing a dull fury as I drove over to the funeral home. Kang was being a complete dick making me wait like this, and I didn't have a fucking choice but to take it, which pissed me off even more. He had access to more brains than I did by a long shot. Most deaths didn't require autopsy. In the less than 6 weeks I'd been working for the coroner's office, I'd seen at least half the bodies released on scene. Plus, the funeral homes got everyone who died at nursing homes and hospitals. Sure, most of those were natural deaths, which usually meant they were older. And okay, so older brains didn't taste as great, but seriously, once you added some flavor or spice like my soup, it didn't make that much difference. The thought made me giggle in a silly, almost hysterical way. Maybe I needed to start making recipes for brains. Something more than throwing some tomato soup or coffee in. And maybe there was something that could be done for brains that were decomposing and liquefying. Brain soup? Vichyssoise? I didn't know if decomposing brains still had the enzyme or whatever the hell it was that zombies needed, but at some point, I'd probably have to try it. What was the worst that could happen? I'd die? I sniggered again as I pulled around to the back of the funeral home. There was only one car parked there. I hoped and assumed it was Kang's. I hadn't even considered that other people could be working at this time. Simply assumed that had to be why he wanted me to come by this late, after everyone else was gone. Hell, I hadn't been thinking about much at all, trying to rely on stupid instinct. And right now, my instinct wanted me to club passing joggers down and scoop their brains out. I should have come to Kang sooner, I realized. I was desperate now, and he'd see it. He'd ask for anything, and I'd give it to him. Already my skin felt as if it was about to slip off my bones. Fuck it. Lesson learned. I was getting a lot of those lately. I rapped on the back door. Waited, mentally rehearsing what I was going to say, or rather trying to mentally rehearse. It was kind of tough to do since I had no idea what I wanted to say. I rapped again, tried the handle. To my relief, it was unlocked. I sure as hell didn't want to turn around and leave. I didn't have anywhere else to go at this point. "Hey, Kang," I called tentatively as I stepped in. He'd better have the brains here for me. I'd fight him for them if I had to. I suddenly realized that my hands were tightened into fists. I forced myself to unclench them. Kang would come through for me. I knew that much. He'd charge me through the nose, but he'd come through for me. I got a faint whiff of brains as I came down the hall, but it was mixed with an undercurrent of something I couldn't immediately pin down. I entered the embalming room and wrinkled my nose. I knew what that other scent was now. There was a body on the table that had apparently recently been embalmed. When a body came straight to the funeral home, the brains stayed nice and safe in the skull. They weren't conveniently sliced up and put in a bag, ready for the taking. But I could barely smell brains in this body, which made me think that most of them had already been removed. "How does Kang get the brains out?" I suddenly wondered, frowning down at the body. I didn't see any sign that he'd drilled a hole in the skull. It would be easy enough to fill something like that in with wax or putty or something, but then there'd be the risk that someone else might notice. Maybe through the nose? Wasn't that how the Egyptians did it? Now I was curious. "Kang," I called again. I moved through the embalming room, surrounded by the low hum of the cooler. I frowned as another odor cut through the faint scent of brains. Coppery and... blood. A sliver of fear warmed through me. That had to be a lot of blood for it to get through my dulled senses. I came round the corner and let out an involuntary scream that would have done any horror movie teenage camper proud. Gasping raggedly for breath, I shuffled backwards, away from the headless corpse and the broad, dark pool surrounding it. He hasn't been dead long, an oddly rational part of my mind informed me. The blood didn't look like it had coagulated much, and still dripped from the stump of neck in large, slow plops. Not even an hour, probably. That's Kang, a more freaked out part of my mind shrieked. That's Kang. Someone was definitely hunting zombies. There was no way I could deny it now. I backed away as panic and horror closed my throat. Where am I going to get brains? I thought, instantly shamed and miserable that I was so concerned with myself at this moment. What if the cops thought I did this? That was probably a bigger concern right now. I needed to get the hell out of here. Wipe down the doorknobs for fingerprints. Oh, Angel, you are so fucked. I couldn't stay and call the cops. I knew that. Not with me falling apart and smelling like this. I knew that running away from the scene would only make me look guilty as fucking hell if anyone ever knew I was here, but I didn't see that I had a choice. Besides, no one would really think that I managed to do this, right? I mean, for fuck's sake, he outweighed me by at least 50 pounds. At the worst, I'd get in trouble for not reporting it, and I could claim that I was afraid the killer was still nearby. Oh, God. That thought nearly sent me into a blind panic. I reached for the wall, took several heaving breaths to keep from freaking out. No. Stop. I needed to try and think like someone with a fucking ounce of intelligence. But God, I was so hungry. Taking a shaken breath, I straightened. He'd told me to meet him here. Surely that meant he had brains to give me. I spun and returned to the embalming room. I'd seen gloves in a box on the wall. I quickly snagged a pair and pulled them on. Tugged another pair on over those. I'd seen something in one of my nifty crime shows where the cops had recovered prints even though the perp had worn latex gloves. I had no idea if that was true, but I didn't see any reason to risk it. Moving as quickly as I could, I searched for anything that looked like it might contain brains. Cooler, refrigerator, anything. I could feel a clock ticking in the back of my head, telling me I'd already been there too long, and I needed to get the hell out. Kang had been convinced no one knew he was a zombie, but he'd been wrong. Hell, everyone who bought brains from him had to know, right? And the only one who knew I was one was Kang. And whoever made me, I reluctantly reminded myself. But whoever was doing this must have had some way of discovering that Zeke and Pizza Guy and Sweet Bayou Road Dude were zombies. And maybe the reason my zombie daddy never contacted me was because he'd been whacked by this killer. Panic rose as I searched everywhere I could think of and still couldn't find any brains. I've been here too long, I told myself, nearly sobbing at the realization that I was going to have to leave empty-handed. Maybe he hadn't planned on giving me any. I forced myself to consider the thought. But the whole brain thing was his business, which meant he had to have some saved up somewhere, right? Maybe they were at his house, wherever the fuck that was. I made myself go back into the hallway, somehow avoiding stepping in the pool of blood while I tugged Kang's wallet out of his back pocket. I memorized the address on his license and replaced his wallet. I just had to hope the address was current. Grabbing a towel, I hurriedly wiped down every surface I could have possibly touched before I'd pulled on the gloves. I cautiously peeked out the back door to make sure no one was nearby, walked oh so casually to my car, pulse slamming in near panic the entire distance. There wasn't another soul around. I was so hungry that if any living human had been within 50 yards, I'd have been able to smell them. Great. One more zombie superpower. I was a goddamn life detector when I was hungry enough. I dropped the towel into the back seat, peeled off the gloves, and got the hell out of there. I drove in random directions for about 15 minutes, gritting my teeth against the awareness of brains all around me. I finally ducked behind a grocery store and tossed the gloves and the towel into a dumpster. I drove away, hands gripping the steering wheel tightly as the hunger thrashed and growled. A glance at myself in the rearview mirror sent a chill through me. Skin was peeling off my forehead, and my complexion had a greenish-gray cast. My left eye was starting to cloud over, which explained why I was having some trouble seeing out of it. Thank God it was dusk. Somehow, I'd completely lost the flesh off the pinky and ring fingers on my right hand, probably when I'd pulled the gloves off. Brains. The thought consumed me. I drove hunched down in the seat to keep anyone from seeing me, operating the car on instinct more than anything. Luckily, I was familiar with Kang's neighborhood. I wasn't sure I had the mental focus right now to be able to read a map. Slowing at the corner, I watched as an elderly woman pulled a wheeled cart of groceries down the sidewalk. She'd be easy to take down. Probably couldn't run or anything. I could break her neck before she could make much noise, drag her into that backyard. There was no one else nearby right now. I could bust her skull open with a brick or one of those stones bordering the flower bed. God, it would taste like heaven. The honk from behind me jerked me back to myself. My gaze shot to the rearview mirror to see a Lexus and a glowering man behind the steering wheel. To my shock, I realized that I'd opened my door. Oh my God. I was about to do it. I was going to attack that woman. The man behind me honked again. I hurriedly slammed my door shut and stomped on the gas, terror and panic briefly overwhelming the hunger. Get to Kang's house, I repeated to myself, clinging to that thought like a lifeline. Don't look at anyone. Don't give the hunger any reason to take over. This was how a zombie went rogue. Now I understood. With terrifying clarity, I understood. I managed to maintain enough self-preservation to park on the next street over instead of pulling into Kang's driveway. Tugging my jacket down over my rotting hands, I stepped out of the car. There were a few people in the area, but no one outside. Hopefully no one was looking out a window. Walking as casually as I could, I ducked between the houses. A ditch separated Kang's backyard from that of the house behind his, but daylight was almost gone, and there were trees which would give me some cover. I paused before covering the distance to his back door, took a deep breath, scenting. No one in the house as far as I could tell. No one in the adjacent houses either. A couple of houses down there was a man in his backyard having a smoke behind a privacy fence. Get to Kang's, I muttered, forcing myself forward instead of toward the man in his backyard. I'd never had anything resembling willpower before now. Never been able to convince myself to stop taking pills, or keep a job, or clean up my house. But I was gonna fucking break my willpower in right now. I won't become a monster. I can't. The back door was solid, but also had window panes in it. Silently praying that Kang didn't have an alarm system, I pulled my jacket sleeve all the way over my hand and punched through the glass in one of the panes. Reaching through to unlock the door, I could feel dimly that the glass had sliced into my hand and arm, but it didn't hurt. Dark, thick blood welled up sluggishly from the slices, then stopped. I tucked my arm further up into my sleeve. I wasn't about to put myself in any danger of dripping blood anywhere. I wasn't greeted with a shrieking siren when I pushed the door open, and I didn't see a control pad anywhere, so at least that much was going all right. I made my way to the kitchen and went straight to the fridge. He had it well stocked, and it was obvious that he enjoyed cooking, but my zombie super sense of smell didn't twig to any stash of brains in there. Still, I opened every container and took a deep whiff to be sure. I checked the freezer next, heart sinking at the sight of about a dozen boxes of frozen pizza, but no bags or containers or anything that could hold brains. This didn't make sense. Where the hell did he keep his stash? Fighting panic, I prowled through the house, searching for anything that could function as a cooler or a fridge. I thought I struck gold when I found the deep freeze out in the garage, but disappointment threatened to crush me again when I saw that it was full of more frozen dinners. I stumbled back into the house. If I'd been able to cry, I'd have been sobbing in frustration. This couldn't be happening to me. He had to have brains somewhere. What if he kept them somewhere else? A storage unit or something like that. If that was the case, I was totally fucked. I couldn't go outside again. I barely made it in here without giving in to the hunger and killing someone. I slowly sat down on the kitchen floor, staring dully at the high-quality pots and pans hanging from the rack above the range. Maybe it would be best if the zombie killer got me, I thought dully. I didn't want to be a murderer. Best to take me out before I killed anyone. It wouldn't be hard to find me. Follow the brains. Hell, if I was hunting zombies, that's what I'd do. Find their food source. Food. I clambered back to my feet. Why the hell would someone who loved to cook have so many frozen dinners? I pulled the freezer open and yanked the top box off the rack, noting absently that it was for some sort of diet entree. Moron, that should have been your first clue. I ripped the top of the box off, pulled the plastic open, inhaled. I hadn't smelled it earlier because they were frozen and sealed in plastic, but now I knew I'd struck gold. I didn't bother heating it. I didn't care if they were frozen, though I giggled stupidly as I shoved the frozen brains into my mouth. Brain freeze. Sensation returned to my mouth first, protesting the cold that I was forcing into my body. I was dimly aware that there was real food mixed in, rice and meat and flavoring. Properly heated, it would probably be fantastic. I didn't care about fantastic at the moment. The real food in it was almost annoying since it got in the way of the brains, but I continued to cram it into my mouth as fast as I could. Slowly, the bliss began to spread through my body, and I found myself crying from the agonizing relief. I felt like one of those shirts that only show color in sunlight, and I was getting a tan now, baby. I ate until I couldn't possibly stuff in another bite, and the hunger had curled into sated, sleepy comfort. The rest of me followed suit shortly after. I experienced an instant of sheer panic when I woke and found myself on an unfamiliar kitchen floor. Memory clicked into place a few seconds later at the sight of several empty, lean menu boxes scattered around me, and I allowed myself to relax a bit. It was still dark outside, and the clock on the stove read 3:17. And I haven't been beheaded by a zombie killer yet, I thought, with a shaky smile. Things are looking better. I crumpled the empty boxes into the trash, then found a large, clean garbage bag. That's probably why I couldn't find the brains at the funeral home, I realized with chagrin as I dumped the frozen dinners from both freezers into the bag. I could barely smell them packaged and frozen like this. Oh well, I sure as hell wasn't going to go back to the funeral home and look for them. I had no idea if Kang's body had been found yet, but considering that no cops had shown up here, I was going to keep operating on the theory that it hadn't been. Guilt tightened my stomach at the thought of his body still lying in that hallway. But there was no way for me to report the murder without getting myself into trouble, I told myself. Certainly not last night when I was rotting and falling apart, and I couldn't do it now. What excuse would I have for finding him at 3 in the morning? I sent up a silent apology to Kang. He'd have understood. He'd have done the same thing, I thought with a sad smile. He was much too mercenary to put himself at risk. Pausing at the back door, I grimaced at the broken glass. That looked suspicious as all hell. I sighed and swept my gaze around. I'd been a moron and gone all over the place with no gloves on. Screw it. If by some chance the cops came here and found my prints, I'd just lie and say that Kang and I were friends and I'd been here before. Working quickly, I swept up the glass and dumped it under the empty frozen dinner boxes in the trash. Next, I fashioned a repair for the back window out of duct tape and cardboard that would hopefully have any cops believing it was old damage. After all, what intruder would bother to patch a hole they'd made in glass? Plus, if they searched the house, they wouldn't find any valuables missing. I hefted the bag of brains, locked the back door at the knob, and closed it behind me, took a deep breath to see if anyone was nearby. I blew it out a second later with a roll of my eyes. Zombie super smell didn't work anywhere near as well when I wasn't starving. Yeah, well, I'll gladly trade not rotten for super smell, I decided as I took off in a sprint for my car. I was fully tanked up now, and even with what was probably 30 pounds of frozen brain dinners weighing me down, I ran like the wind. I figured it was better to look suspicious because I was running with a garbage bag than to look suspicious because I was walking with a garbage bag, because at least there'd be less time for anyone to notice me while I was running. My car was still where I'd left it. A moment later, I was driving away, grinning in relief and triumph. Chapter 31. Making my getaway was the first step, but now I had a bag full of frozen brains, and this was South Louisiana. Even in late October, it could get pretty warm during the day, and I sure as hell didn't want to lose a stash of this magnitude. I found an open gas station that sold cheap styrofoam coolers and bought way more ice than I probably needed. I pulled the plastic bags of brains out of the cardboard boxes so that I could fit them all into the cooler, and in short order, I had the whole lot iced down. I figured I had maybe a day or so before they thawed. Okay, Angel, you have a cooler full of stuff that is vital to your fucking survival, which meant that I needed to make some hard decisions. Hard decisions weren't my strength. Avoiding them was my usual method, but that would prove pretty disastrous here, As far as I could tell, my current options were to A, magically find an affordable and non-skeevy apartment within the next day, B, take Randy up on his offer, C, go back and deal with my dad, or D, rent a storage unit and sleep in my car until I could figure out a better solution. I returned to the same spot in the park where I'd waited before going to see Kang, leaned the seat back and closed my eyes. It wasn't really that hard to make a decision, I realized. Sure, I wasn't exactly thrilled to be planning out how to handle being homeless, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized that it was really the only option that left me with any self-respect. I wasn't prepared to deal with my dad. I couldn't afford an apartment. And living with Randy was... well, there was so much baggage attached to that, it wasn't even funny. Did I even love him anymore? I frowned. I'd asked him if he loved me, but hadn't really thought about the other half of the equation. I don't think I do. A strange pang went through me. I'd called him my boyfriend for so many years that I suddenly found it hard to believe that he might not be anymore. So what was I supposed to do now? Break up with him? Or just let it drift away? I must have fallen asleep because the next thing I knew I was jerking awake at the sound of my cell phone. The sun was shining right onto me. I squinted against the glare and fumbled for my phone. This spot that was so lovely and shady later in the afternoon was in blinding sun at, I glanced at my watch, 9 a.m. Wow, I must have been wiped out. Maybe my body needed the rest to recover from being so rotted. I finally dug my phone out of my purse, more than a little surprised to see Randy's ID. Some of that synchronicity Dr. LeBlanc was talking about. Hey, babe, he said after I answered. Where you at? I got an idea that might help you out with your whole living situation. I scrubbed a hand over my face. No doubt he was going to ask me again to live with him. I knew I didn't want to, but I'd been hoping to avoid actually telling him that. Confrontations weren't really my thing. But why would he be calling me up to press the issue? Pursuing me wasn't his thing either. I'm in Tucker Point. What's up? Thought of a way you could get your own place. He sounded pleased with himself and a little amused, which put my defenses on alert. A tiny knot of tension unwound as I realized he wasn't going to pressure me about moving in with him, though a silly little twinge of disappointment replaced it. Even though I'd admitted to myself that it was over between us, it would have been nice to be wanted like that. I took a deep breath, pushed the stupid disappointment aside. Randy, I swear to God, if this is some joke about me giving blowjobs in the Pillars parking lot. No, it's not that. Meet me at Double D's. I'll tell you what I got. I hesitated, then sighed. Sure, what else did I have to do? Maybe he had a line on a place I could rent that wasn't complete shit. I made a quick detour to a McDonald's and did a quick washing up in their bathroom. I changed clothes as well, into cargo pants and long-sleeve shirt, simply because those were the first things I grabbed out of the bags containing my worldly possessions. There was no way to wash my hair, so I simply brushed it back as neat as I could manage. If this thing with Randy didn't pan out into a place to live, my next move was going to be to join a gym, not because I had any desire to get fit, which didn't really matter anymore now that I was a zombie. But for less than $100 a month, I'd have a place to shower and change clothes every day. I'd still have to sleep in my car, though, and I'd have to buy a freezer and keep my brains in a storage unit. Okay, so what if I'm too broke to live on my own? I thought fiercely as I pulled into the parking lot of the diner. It'll suck, but I'll get through it. Still, it would definitely make my day if Randy could find me a place to sleep other than my car. After making sure the cooler was tightly closed in the trunk, I headed inside, inhaling deeply of the scent of waffles and eggs and coffee. As tanked up on brains as I was, breakfast was going to taste fantastic. Randy was in the booth farthest from the door, seated so that he could see anyone coming in. I slid into the cracked vinyl seat across from him and gave the waitress a smile as she stepped up. Coffee, orange juice, 3 pancakes, 2 eggs over easy, bacon, and grits. I rattled off, hiding a grin at the memory of Ed ordering a similarly massive amount of food. Damn, Angel, when did you last eat? Randy asked with a laugh as the waitress scribbled down the order and hurried away.
There's no way you'll eat all that.
I shrugged. I'm hungry. The hunger for real and normal food felt insanely tame compared to the clawing of the hunger. And when I was hungry, it was tough to eat real food since I could barely taste anything. Food only tasted decent about one day out of three unless I had unlimited supply of brains. I wasn't about to waste this opportunity to actually enjoy it. And this place had good southern comfort food dripping with butter and calories, worth gorging on. Why the hell couldn't I crave something less weird than brains? Chocolate zombie. That would be cool. Must have chocolate. I turned the giggle into a cough, then looked over at Randy. Okay, what gives? I asked. He started to speak and then paused as the waitress returned and poured my coffee. I added milk and sugar, cupped the mug in both hands, and sipped. Coffee zombie would make more sense. I looked at him expectantly.
Damn, you look like you never had coffee before.
I smiled slightly. I've decided to appreciate the good things in life. Especially since I wasn't always able to experience them. Besides, I needed to make sure I continued to eat real food to keep me from needing the brains quite so often, right? Kang's warning about burning up the brains came back to me, and my throat tightened briefly at the reminder of him. Kang and I hadn't been the best of friends or anything like that, but I felt as if I'd lost a companion in arms, or something equally dorky. I was on my own now with this whole zombie thing, flying solo. Fuck it. I could do this. Randy gave a shrug.
So, I was talking to Clive and telling him about your job and some of the stuff you told me.
I looked at him blankly. What stuff? About the bodies? He leaned forward and a chill of foreboding came over me.
No. I mean, what you were telling me about.
He lowered his voice and flicked a glance around.
The pills.
I kept my hands wrapped around the mug as an uncomfortable knot began to form in my stomach. Yeah? I couldn't make myself say anything else. I knew where he was going with this.
Yeah. He said that...
He abruptly paused and straightened as the waitress returned and slid a plate of pancakes and a bowl of grits onto the table in front of me. Eggs and bacon will be right out, hun, she said with a smile before scurrying off again. I carefully set my mug down and picked up my fork, controlling the tremor in my hand as best I could. Randy kept his voice low.
He already knew about the stuff with the CO people seizing the pills. He said that all you had to do was slide some of that stuff his way. He'd take care of you. You wouldn't have to do any selling or anything like that. There's no way you could get into trouble. I mean, they destroyed stuff anyway, right? So... what difference does it make?
I stayed silent, carefully cutting off pieces of pancake with my fork and bringing them to my mouth. The very act of chewing and swallowing seemed strangely exaggerated. I'd get in trouble if I was caught taking the drugs, I finally said.
So don't get caught,
he replied with a laugh, as if that solved everything. Then he cocked his head.
Angel, what's the deal? You said yourself that they destroy the stuff. It's not stealing from anyone who needs it. And you do need the money. What, you're going to live with your white trash loser dad for the rest of your life?
He's not a white trash loser, I snapped. Stark disbelief filled his eyes.
Right. Y'all live in a fucking shack. He smacks you around and drinks all the time.
He took a deep breath.
Look. I'm sorry I insulted your dad.
Then he spoiled the apology by rolling his eyes.
But you need to think about you. Clive will take care of all the hard work and give you half of what he makes.
I put my fork down. Suddenly the pancake didn't taste so great.
And what do you get?
Wary surprise flashed across his face. Then he gave me a wry shrug and smile.
I get a small cut, too. I'm like the middleman, see? Since I'm hooking you two up and all.
I gave a short nod.
Maybe. Maybe I wouldn't have to be homeless.
A weird relief filled me at the thought, and I suddenly realized how nervous I'd been at the thought of having to sleep in my car. Maybe I was being stupid and reckless to think that I could make it on my own. I cleared my throat and tried again. How much does he think I can get? Randy spread his hands.
That depends on what you can get him. But you know how much this stuff goes for on the street.
He tapped the table, leaning forward a bit more.
Babe, I'm thinking about you. You should too. Hell, this doesn't have to be a long-term thing. Maybe only for a few weeks. In that time, you could get more than you earn in the coroner's office in a fucking year. And then you wouldn't have to keep working there.
He chuckled.
And you wouldn't smell like dead bodies anymore.
His words were like a bucket of ice water. I took a shuddering breath. How could I even be considering this? I had everything to lose. Yeah, Randy was right. I needed to think about myself. I remember one time when another buddy of yours hooked me up with a really great deal, I said. I couldn't lose, remember? $500 and I got a car that was practically new. I met his eyes with a hard gaze of my own. Remember that? Remember me going to jail? He winced.
Yeah. Well, that was fucked up. Everything that could have gone wrong did.
I shook my head. No, the first thing that went wrong is that I believed something that was too good to be true. He let out an exaggerated breath.
Shit happens, but this...
No, Randy, I interrupted. Shit doesn't just happen. Someone has to make a boneheaded decision first, and you know what? I happen to like my job. Anger darkened his eyes.
Look, Angel, I've put up with a lot of your fucked up neurotic shit over the years. I've given you crash space whenever you wanted it, and listened to you whine about how your folks are so awful. You're being pretty selfish here.
Selfish? The word exploded from me. I was aware that people near us had turned to look, but I didn't care. Jesus, Randy! If I was caught, I'd go to jail. Did you even think about that?
Don't give me any of that holier-than-thou crap, he said, sneering. Clive says you haven't bought anything from him in almost 2 months, and there's no way you went cold turkey and quit using. So I know you've been skimming those pills from work. What's the deal? You're already selling them on your own? You don't want to give me a cut after everything I've fucking done for you?
Fury seared through me, white and hot. Don't you ever fucking accuse me of that, I said, voice low and intense. I've never stolen anything from work. Especially not drugs. I'm not using anymore. I'm trying to turn my life around. Maybe you don't understand that, but that's not my problem, and I'm not going to let you drag me down anymore. Randy let out a harsh bark of laughter.
Me? Drag you down? That's rich. Man, you become one hell of an arrogant little bitch. Oh yeah, you're such a model of goddamn virtue. Is that why you went off and fucked that guy you met at Pillars the last time we were there? How much did you make off him?
I stared at him. What the hell are you talking about? His eyes narrowed.
When you left with that dickwad who'd been buying you drinks all night, I went out to see what the fuck was going on, and your drunk ass was all over him. You told me you wanted a good hard ride, and then the two of you peeled out in his Porsche.
Bitter flashes of memory clicked into place. I don't remember much from that night, but I didn't fuck him. He snorted.
Yeah, sure.
I shook my head, feeling almost dizzy for an instant. No, I said, more memories suddenly crowding in. I hadn't tried to walk home from the bar. No, I was talking about his car. I'd never ridden in a Porsche before. I dragged my eyes up to him. You're the one who'd been ignoring me all night for that other twit. He bought me a couple of drinks. I stared at him as shock and betrayal surged through me. I was falling down drunk and you let me go off with him. Did you know him? Did I? It didn't occur to you to watch out for me? Randy's scowl deepened, but there was a flicker of shame in his eyes.
I thought you knew him, he muttered.
He was lying. He'd known perfectly well that I had no idea who the guy was. I wrapped my hands around my mug. I think you need to go, Randy, I said, rather amazed at how calmly I was able to get the words out. His brow creased in puzzlement.
Angel,
I spoke quietly, but with the entire force of my will behind it. Let me rephrase it. Go fuck yourself. This was the closure that I'd been wanting, and then some. I'm not going to steal drugs for you or anyone else, and if you try to start a rumor that says I am, I will fuck you up. He drew back. Maybe he could see in my eyes that I had no fear of him in any way and that I meant every word. Hell, I was dead already. I ate brains, for God's sake.
You're fucking crazy, he mumbled, but there was no heat in his words.
I allowed myself a small smile. No, it's much worse than that. Now please, go fuck yourself. I don't ever want to see you again. It was obvious he wanted to say something else, some sort of stinging retort that would make me reconsider, cause me to doubt myself, but he didn't. Maybe he knew he'd be wasting his breath. Slamming up from the table, he settled for storming out of the diner. I didn't turn to watch him leave. I could hear his muttered cursing as he walked away. A couple of seconds later, I heard the ringing of the bell over the front door. I picked up my fork and continued to eat my pancakes as more and more pieces of memory fell into place. By the time I finished breakfast, I knew where to start looking for the rest. Chapter 32. After checking the styrofoam cooler to be sure everything was still perfectly frozen, I headed to the hospital. The volunteer at the front desk was 100 years old and gave the worst directions ever, but after a number of wrong turns and the interrogation of a cute orderly, I finally found the medical records department. I had to pay a copying fee, but 10 minutes later I had a stack of papers that comprised all of the records and charts and reports from my visit to the ER 2 months ago. Returning to my car, I cranked it to get the AC going, pushed my seat back, and started flipping through the papers. There weren't too many surprises, which was a bit of a disappointment. I wanted to find some sort of confirmation that my memories weren't completely off the deep end, or that the theory nagging at me was wrong, but the gist of the report was that I'd been brought in suffering from an apparent overdose. No injuries had been noted. I leaned back in the seat, catching sight of myself in the rearview mirror. I barely recognized myself, but in a kind of good way. My usually frizzy hair was combed and fairly neat. I had no makeup on, but instead of looking like death warmed over, I looked fresh. I experimented with a smile and felt an odd pleasure at the resulting look. Sure, I was topped off with brains right now, but even beyond that, I looked all right. Pretty good, in fact. Cripes! When was the last time I looked in the mirror and was proud of what I saw? Still smiling, I continued flipping through the papers, stopping when I came to the lab reports. Most of it was in terms I couldn't understand, but the talk screen had drug names that I recognized. I sighed as I read through the list. It was a wonder I'd never overdosed before. Of course, I hadn't really given a shit about surviving back then. I wasn't the sort to ever take the step of committing suicide, but I'd sure been trying to do it in a passive way. Story of my life. Or rather, it was the story of my life. Flunitrazepam. That was a drug I didn't recognize. But I vaguely remembered Dr. LeBlanc muttering something about it when looking through the tox reports on autopsies. I frowned. I'd smoked some pot. That was the cannabinoids. And I'd taken a Lortab. And then, of course, I'd been drinking. I'd scored a Percocet from the bartender, but I hadn't taken anything else except for a Xanax the night before. I was sure of it. Puzzled, I drove back to the morgue, parked my car in the shade, headed inside, and went straight to the investigator's office. Darrell wasn't in, but Monica was, her fingers flying across the keyboard in absurd contrast to the painstaking hunt-and-peck technique that I utilized. I tapped lightly on the doorframe. Hey, Monica, you got a sec? She glanced up and gave me a brisk nod.
Sure. What brings you in on your day off?
I settled into the chair in front of her desk, suddenly unsure of how to ask what I wanted to know.
Well, I've been doing some reading and stuff, you know, trying to learn more about this business and all.
A smile lit her face.
That's cool. You're a smart chick. You don't want to be a van driver forever, I'm sure. Heck, you'd do great as a paramedic or a nurse.
That shocked me out of my train of thought, and it took me a second to respond.
Me?
I laughed and shook my head.
Monica, I don't even have my GED.
Psh, so what?
You could get that, nothing flat. Hell, you probably pass it right now without even studying. And then you could go train to be an EMT basic. You could get through that in just a few months.
Really? But you're a paramedic, right?
Yep, that's a 2-year program. Though sometimes there are accelerated programs where you can get it in under a year.
Do death investigators have to have medical backgrounds? I asked, suddenly intrigued at the thought of having an actual career.
She shook her head. This particular office likes for us to have medical backgrounds since it makes it easier to understand stuff and work with the pathologist, but it's not a requirement.
I sat back, thoughts whirling. I didn't want to be a van driver forever. I was tied to the morgue because of the access to brains, but what if I went to school for other stuff so that I could be an investigator? That would be more money. I'd still be where I could get to the brains and...
So did you have a question for me?
Monica asked, ganking me back to reality.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
With difficulty, I wrenched my train of thought back onto its tracks, filing away the thought of becoming an investigator for another time. How hard is it to overdose on alcohol and painkillers like, say, Percocet or Lortab? She spread her hands and grimaced.
Wow, that depends on a lot of factors, weight, health, medical history, you name it.
But say someone healthy and normal had a couple of beers and just had one perk and one Lortab. That wouldn't be dangerous, right? She pursed her lips.
Without repeating my earlier bit about all the other factors, I think it's unlikely that anyone in good health could OD on that alone.
I pulled the slip of paper out of my pocket.
Okay. Next question. What's flunitrazepam?
An expression of distaste twisted her mouth.
That's Rohypnol, the date rape drug, she explained.
I stared at her, shock and horror undoubtedly stamped across my face. A sudden understanding flared in her eyes, and I realized she knew exactly why I was asking.
That one is easy to overdose on, she said in a tone so gentle that I knew she knew, especially if someone had been taking other drugs prior.
I could feel a flush of humiliation climbing up my neck. I'd suspected that there were more than a few people at the coroner's office who were aware of my background and what had happened to me. There were privacy regs all over the place, but people still gossiped.
Yeah, I know all about your history, Monica said with a dismissive wave. Big fucking deal. That's exactly what it is, history, in the past.
She looked angry, and it was with a shock that I realized she wasn't angry at me, but for me. I fumbled for something to say, but she apparently wasn't finished.
It's none of my business, and you can tell me to fuck off if you want,
she said, tone suddenly clipped and harder than usual.
And I don't know if it'll make you feel any better. Her mouth tightened into a thin line. But the asshole who did that to you won't be doing it to anyone else.
What? I couldn't manage anything beyond that. Her eyes grew hard.
I worked a scene that night. An MVA. Only the one occupant. It was a messy accident, ejection and decapitation, but he had a bottle of pills in his pocket. No markings on the bottle.
She abruptly stood, started shuffling papers. I got the impression she wasn't looking for anything, simply wanted to do something with her hands.
Anyway, the victim's tox screen came back clean, other than some alcohol, and not much of that. But I sent the pills off for testing and they came back as flunitrazepam.
She gave her head a sharp shake.
Only one reason he'd have them, but I didn't think about it much, until now.
I could only stare, stunned into silence. Monica took a deep breath, released it, and then gave me a more normal smile.
You know, if you're really interested in becoming an investigator, you should go into some of the old case files and see how they're written up. You can pull reports out by date, if you want.
The look she gave me was strangely penetrating.
I need to run an errand. Feel free to use my computer. Log out when you're done, okay?
She was almost out the door before I could manage a response.
Monica, wait,
I croaked. She stopped in the doorway, slowly turned back.
Why do you... Shit. I couldn't say what I knew I wanted to say. Why are you angry for my sake when this was something I did to myself? Why are you pissed on my behalf when I was the moron who got drunk and got into the car with him? Why don't you hate me as much as I hate myself? Monica's expression softened, though her mouth stayed hard.
Nobody deserves rape. Nobody.
But I wasn't raped, I blurted. Her eyes darkened.
Not every rape is physical, she said in a quiet voice.
Then she was out the door. I sat where I was for at least a full minute before I stood and slowly made my way to her chair. The report program was already on screen. All I had to do was input the date. There were 3 death reports from that day, but only one that was listed as an MVA, motor vehicle accident. I printed it all out without reading it, reports, pictures, everything, then logged out of the computer, retrieved my printouts, and headed out.
Chapter 33.
I ended up going back to the diner, simply because I couldn't think of anywhere else to go where I could have the room to spread out and look everything over. I felt a little silly as the waitress came up to me, but apparently it wasn't the first time she'd seen a booth used as a temporary work desk. She merely poured me coffee and gave me a warm smile. I sipped my coffee and started flipping quickly through the thick sheaf of papers. Right now there was only one thing I was really interested in. Decedent, Herbert Singleton. White male, 37 years old, lived in Longville. Only next of kin was an ex-wife who lived in Lafayette. There was a driver's license picture, and I peered at it for close to a minute while more memories flashed into place. Yeah, this was the guy. I'd probably seen him at Pillars once or twice before. Not a local, just someone who wanted a drink and a good time, maybe too good a time. So, Herbert, were you the one who made me like this? Were you a zombie? That he'd roofied me, I had no doubt, but he hadn't counted on the fact that I already had a nice high rockin' when he started buying me drinks, and adding his special little touch of Rohypnol to them. The full effect must not have hit me until I was in his car. Maybe he realized I was overdosing and he panicked? Then why drive out to the middle of nowhere instead of a hospital? Because if he'd gone to the hospital, they'd have figured out that he was probably the one who roofied me. But if he made me a zombie, he could walk away from the whole thing. I was dying, so he did whatever zombies do and then dumped me on the side of the road. I frowned. No, that didn't hold water. I would have had to eat brains immediately, right? Okay, so he might have had his own stash. And then after dumping me, he got into a wreck, or was hunted down by the zombie killer. My frown deepened. Nope, it still didn't work. Someone had sent me the clothing and the brain drinks in the ER and had arranged for the job at the morgue. Well, maybe there's a big Protect New Zombies conspiracy going on. I scrubbed a hand over my face. This was stupid. If this guy had been a zombie, why would he have gone to the trouble of making me one too simply because I was overdosing? It was far more likely that he'd taken me out to that remote highway to bash my head in and scoop out some nice fresh brains. Drug the white trash skank, take her out to the swamp, chow down. And then what? The zombie killer had saved me? I made a noise of frustration. None of this made sense. But I'd had it with being in the dark. I had the reports, and I was going to find the damn answer if it took me the rest of my undead life. Well armed with coffee and workspace, I spread the pages of the death report out and began my search for any possible clues that could help me figure out what the hell had happened. On a separate piece of paper, I made notes of anything that might help things make sense. According to the state police accident report, it appeared that dear old Herbert lost control of the vehicle on a curve and went off the road, at which time the car flipped once and hit a tree. The driver had been ejected and decapitated, and fragments of the skull had been found on the highway. Toxicology reports show that Herbert's blood alcohol was 0.06, technically not over the legal limit, but probably enough to impair his reactions on that curve. But no mention of a passenger. Working hard? I looked up to see Ed with a coffee cup in his hand and a smile on his face. Because if you are, he continued, I feel somehow obligated to interrupt you. I grinned. Oh, you are so thoughtful. I pulled the papers closer to me in order to make some room on the table. Come on, interrupt away. I'm just trying to figure out some stuff that's been bugging me. What are you up to? He sat and set his coffee cup down.
I'm waiting for Marianne so I can give her the keys to my apartment. Then I'm going to pick up Marcus and we'll be on our way for our annual fruitless attempt to murder Bambi's parents.
I laughed. Male bonding at its best.
Testosterone heaven, he added, grinning. As well as a nifty excuse to play with ATVs.
He nodded toward the window. I followed his gaze to see a pickup with two four-wheelers strapped onto a platform across the back.
So what am I interrupting here?
Ed asked, peering down at the papers spread across the table.
Ooh, looks like work stuff, he made a face.
Well, it's actually a sort of weird personal thing, to be honest. He lifted an eyebrow.
Oh, I'm totally into weird personal things. Is it dirty as well?
I laughed.
You wish.
I shook my head. Actually, this accident happened the same night that you... I sighed and screwed my face into a grimace. Saved me from killing myself from an overdose.
Ouch. Yeah. Strange night, that one.
You're talking about the fatality out by the parish line? At my nod, he leaned back.
I'd come on shift only about half an hour earlier. My unit was dispatched to that scene, but it was pretty clear they weren't going to need our services. The cops were pretty well tied up between that accident and the murder scene out on Sweet Bayou Road.
He winced.
Which is where Marcus found you. We'd just left the accident scene when we got the call to his location. You lucked into it there.
How so?
Well, Marcus was actually assigned to be patrolling the district by the state line, where the accident occurred. He told me the only reason he was near Sweet Bayou was because he dribbled something on his uniform and had to run home to change.
I had to smile at that. A spot on his shirt? The horror.
Ed laughed. Yeah, for a tough guy, he can be a bit of a priss.
So why are you so interested in this MBA? Okay, this is going to sound crazy, but I'm pretty sure I was in that car. I left the bar with this guy that night. I tapped the page with Herbert's driver's license information. Ed shook his head firmly.
There's no way you could have been in that car when it wrecked.
You didn't have a scratch on you.
Or clothing, he added with an apologetic grimace. Besides, the accident was almost 20 miles from where you were.
Yeah, there's no way. I know that, but I don't remember a lot from that night, though. So maybe he pulled over and let me out. I trailed off as images of glass and metal and blood flickered haphazardly in my memory. He frowned.
In the middle of the swamp? Naked?
His expression abruptly turned stricken and all traces of humor vanished.
Oh, fuck, Angel, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to joke. Oh, man.
I flushed and shook my head. No, it's okay. I wasn't, attacked. At least that's what the nurse in the ER said. Monica's words flashed through my head. I wasn't raped, but I was drugged. I wouldn't have gotten into his car, and I probably wouldn't have overdosed. And I was attacked, turned into a zombie against my will. I sure as shit hadn't been given a choice about that. Ed was silent for several seconds, then nodded toward the printouts with the pictures.
May I look?
I pushed them his way. I haven't done more than glance at them yet, but I haven't found Angel was here scrawled on the dashboard or anything. He chuckled, then started flipping through the pages. After about half a minute, he paused, attention fixed on one picture.
It's funny, he said. Marcus was on his way back out to help with the accident. After changing his shirt, when he saw you.
Like you said, I'm lucky, I replied. Then I laughed. If he hadn't found me, it probably would have been Deputy Abadie. He probably would have pushed me into the ditch. Ed's expression stayed strangely sober.
How did you get the job at the coroner's office, Angel?
He asked, not looking up. His voice sounded odd, as if he was working hard to keep control of himself. I hesitated, briefly tempted to tell him the fiction about my probation officer arranging it, but I suddenly didn't want to deal with evasions and lies.
I'm not really sure, I admitted.
I got a letter telling me there was a job waiting for me. I asked around a bit, but the most I could find out was a rumor that someone with political connections arranged it for me. I spread my hands and shrugged. I don't know why I would rate that, though. I wish I had a better answer for you.
As I spoke, his face seemed to cave in, grief flooding in so intensely that it nearly took my breath away. I watched him, baffled. What memories could this picture be dredging up to make him look so stricken? And why would my explanation about my job seem to make it worse? A few seconds later, Ed took a shaking breath and set the picture down. The horrible grief in his eyes was gone, replaced by what looked like a weary acceptance.
You okay? I asked tentatively.
I'm fine, he said quietly.
You don't look fine to me, I said, frowning. Is something wrong?
Lifting his gaze, he gave me a smile that completely lacked its usual spark.
Lost my parents in an accident like this. It just hit me all of a sudden.
I'm so sorry, I said, reaching to touch the back of his hand. Is that why you became a paramedic?
His eyes dropped to my fingers on his hand. He made no move to pull away, but I had the weirdest impression that he wanted to.
I suppose you could say that, he said.
When they died, it changed my outlook on a lot of things. His gaze never shifted from where I was touching him. Suddenly self-conscious, I broke contact and pretended to scratch an itch on my arm.
It'll all be fine. He took a deep breath, looked back up at me. You're right, he continued, tapping the picture. If you were in the car, you didn't leave yourself a convenient note.
He glanced at his watch and grimaced.
Hey, I really need to get on my way. Are you going to be here for a while?
Sure, I replied. You want me to give Marianne the keys?
If you could, that would be great, he said, already getting up from the booth.
He fished in his pocket, then dropped the keys on the table.
I'll see you soon, he said, without looking at me, then turned and walked away without another word.
I watched him as he climbed into his truck and drove away, then pulled the picture to me, a shot of the blood-spattered interior of the car. Gruesome, to be sure. I shivered and rubbed my arms. It had to be torture for him to work accident scenes. I couldn't imagine having a job that constantly reminded me of a tragedy in my life. Marianne walked in a couple of minutes later, gaze scanning the diner. I gave her a wave as I held up the keys and her expression cleared. She headed my way and slid into the booth, giving me a perky smile.
So Ed has you doing his grunt work now? She asked with a chuckle.
Yeah, I don't mind, I said. You missed him by only a couple of minutes. He seemed to be in a real hurry to get out of here. I paused.
He was looking at some of the pics from this accident and got real upset. I grimaced.
I feel bad. If I'd known his folks died in a car wreck, I wouldn't have kept all these pics out on the table like this.
A baffled look came over her face.
They didn't die in a car wreck. Ed doesn't like to talk about it, but the story I've always heard is that his dad was killed in a boating accident, and his mom committed suicide a few years later.
Oh, I said, suddenly baffled as well. Well, that's pretty awful, too. So why did he lie to me?
And if they didn't die in a car crash, why did the picture of the blood in the car trigger such a reaction?
Marianne gave a sigh.
Look, sometimes he can be kind of moody. Whatever upset him probably had nothing to do with his parents at all. I think that sometimes he lets things from work get to him. He's a fun and funny guy, but he also has a really big heart.
Then she grinned.
Almost as big as his stomach. That boy sure can put away some food.
I smiled. I've seen him eat. It's a sight for the record books. My gaze fell to the picture again. It was taken from the driver's side and showed the front seats. I could see the passenger seatbelt dangling, obviously unused. Blood lay pooled in both seats, smeared across the doors and soaked into the carpet. It looked as if a pig had been slaughtered. I jerked my head up to look at Marianne.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I was saying how Ed can put away an entire pizza on his own, she said with a laugh. I always have to order a large one for him and a small one for me.
Cold shock rippled over me. Your dog, Kudzu, does it, stay in a pen or in a kennel?
Marianne gave me a perplexed look.
Huh?
No, she has free run of the